Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the TE Podcast by Developing Lafayette. My name is Ben Powers. I'm your host. And what we like to do with this podcast is we like to invite different business owners, different community influencers in Lafayette Parish that really highlight Lafayette Parish and what we're all about.
Today we have a unique episode. It's all about cybersecurity and data privacy and all those things that go along with owning a business, or you know, maybe you're in government and you want to learn how to better protect yourself. There's ways to do that. There's a great company in town that can do that for you. But we'll talk about that in just a second. But first, I want to let you know about our sponsor, Sterling Automotive Pre-Owned Group. Their logo right there at the bottom if you're watching. So Sterling Automotive Pre-Owned Group basically goes through the process of purchasing a pre-owned vehicle, which is a huge challenge for many of us. Especially it causes undue stress and pressure on prospective owners. While Sterling Automotive Group wants to help remove some of that stress by providing dependable vehicles and incredible selection across all locations, you have direct access to over 800 quality pre-owned vehicles across 5 cities and 3 parishes. You can definitely view their inventory at saveatsterling.com. That's saveatsterling.com. You can also go to their Facebook page at facebook.com/sterlingauto. They are a great company, local company. My two cars that I have, one prior and the current one that I have now, is both from Sterling. Never had any issues, which is a great thing, because you don't want any issues when it comes to automotive. Especially, you don't want any issues when it comes to your website or your database or any of that sort of stuff. So that's what we're talking about today. Today I have on 2 cybersecurity professionals, one being Trey King with Infascination.com, and then the other Steve
Booker. Yeah.
Okay. Is it Boucher? I don't know.
I can go with that.
Okay. Steve Booker. You are a cybersecurity and data privacy attorney. So I will let you guys introduce yourself. Trey, if you want to go first, tell us about yourself and kind of what you do.
Okay. Thanks. So I am an IT consultant. I focus and specialize in AWS. And I have a real passion for cybersecurity. I've been working in this space since about 2010. I've come kind of a long road through startups and a number of different ventures that have brought me to this point. It's something that I'm doing now professionally, and I love it a lot. So let's hear from
And Steve, what about
you? Mr. Booker and or Boucher, right?
Yeah, right.
As you said, though, I'm a cybersecurity and data privacy attorney. Basically, what that means is my practice is twofold. I do incident response, which amounts to be responding to data breaches, as they're commonly known. I'll get into that a little bit more, that it's not always exactly a data breach, but responding to incidents that might involve ransomware or the like, crisis management. And on the flip side of that, then also data privacy. So not exactly incident driven, but more on the side of think website privacy policies, privacy disclosures. There's a big California law that came out recently that dictated what companies must disclose about, how they collect information, what information they collect, and then giving California residents in that scope an opportunity to figure out what information companies are retaining about them. And so really just twofold, just the cybersecurity and the privacy side.
Okay. Well, thank you guys for coming on to talk about this. So immediately, one of the main reasons why I think this is a conversation that we're having is there's been several things happening, some in government, some in just general businesses around town, especially our own website, Developing Lafayette, was almost attacked, or was in a process of being attacked in a way. And for you guys listening, Trey King is actually our website architect. Is that a good way to put it? What would be the better way to say that?
I mean, essentially, I focus on running the infrastructure.
Yeah, the infrastructure.
That powers the application, your WordPress site in this case. Okay. So that you can do,
So the website, not of itself, a lot of people look at a website and they think it's just like, they see what they see and they don't think deeper than that. So database and infrastructure goes way deeper than just what you're kind of playing with, obviously.
Yeah, well, I mean, those are two, key components of your architecture. A lot of web applications and, other IT applications are going to use those kind of components. But in the case that we dealt with for developing Lafayette, there was a flood of traffic that was coming in to disrupt the site. And what we needed to do was take advantage of some of the features that AWS offered to filter the traffic that was malicious. So luckily, we have a lot of awesome tools that are in the tool set in AWS that helps us do that rapidly, and it didn't really disturb your audience or your business for very long. So there's a lot of companies I know that that do suffer from denial of service attacks like that. That don't have such a quick resolution.
So with the situation that we went through, you said a denial of service attack. Essentially, it's a flood of traffic hitting your database. What would happen in a company that doesn't have as well managed or well built infrastructure? What would have happened to that company if this would have happened to them?
Well, I mean, there's a number of different scenarios that that might be involved. But if let's say you were in a private data center, or you were running your server out of your business, so it can get expensive. A lot of people want to keep costs at a minimum. So if you were running your web server out of your office, and you've got the IP that Cox has provided you, or that LUS Fiber has provided you. Typically, you only have one of those IPs, and so if that IP is under attack, or if your domain name, which in eventually resolves to that IP, is under attack, it can be quite difficult. You'd need to introduce new networking equipment and employ someone that knew how to operate that gear. So it's not always as simple as taking advantage of an apparatus like what AWS offers that has hundreds of engineers that have put thousands of hours into creating these solutions so that they can mitigate these type of attacks rapidly. So I think to answer the question, you could potentially be looking at a disruption, a very lengthy disruption of your service, if you were in this situation and didn't have these tools.
So for example, let's say a company whose website was basically, let's say they go to GoDaddy.com and plug in their domain, get it bought, fire up a GoDaddy's build your own website kind of setup. If that gets attacked, let's say it's a mom and pop business that is just selling, jewelry and candles online, and that's their main source of income. Are they at risk if they went through GoDaddy, if they went through all that and set it up, built their website through GoDaddy, basically with the limited knowledge of someone that is building a website from those people or those companies, would they be in a situation to be attacked that way, and how would they be able to fix it?
Well, it's possible that they they could be. I don't want to sell GoDaddy short. I know they do have some sophisticated stuff. Actually, I think GoDaddy is running on AWS nowadays.
Everybody's running on AWS,
so,
huh?
So I think that it's to answer your question, it could be a very big deal for an organization, a small company like you're describing, to try to combat this. Think about websites are they seem very commonplace, but in fact there's quite a bit of technology that is underpinning most websites, and though the end user experience these days is really point and click, and it's not much to set up a website, there's a big difference between having an enterprise grade solution for your website versus a consumer level
right.
website.
Okay. So, Steve, whenever an attack happens to a company or a website or a government institution, for example, the denial of data service, let's say it causes an interruption in revenue. Like, as an attorney, is it a very, I'm going to use a very popular attorney's name, Gordon McKernan. Is it kind of like that where, you know, when your website gets hit by a bus, and then do you go sue? Like, is it an ambulance chasing event when it comes to websites like this? Or what is the case for an attorney's position on cybersecurity and data breaches?
Well, I had a law professor who once, every time we would ask a question, his first response would be the typical lawyer answer, which, it depends. Which
okay.
is nobody's favorite answer to any question.
Right.
But it would kind of vary. Just to kind of give a brief cursory view of the landscape you have, what amounts to be a hodgepodge of federal and state laws when it comes to cybersecurity in our country. There is no one comprehensive law. On the federal level, it's more industry-based. Think HIPAA with healthcare. Think FERPA when it comes to education records, things like that. Those are just built by industry to industry and not comprehensive. On a statewide level, you have a collection, now in every single state has one, of information security laws, all of which require notification in the event. Most of them will say you have to notify affected persons and in some cases a government regulator in the event that your data was compromised or acquired by an unauthorized party. Now you look at that in the scenario you just mentioned about denial of service attacks, things where you might just have an interruption of service as opposed to an actual taking. Might not trigger a legal requirement there, but if you're a company and you sustain a denial of service and it shuts down your website, that prevents you from doing business, maybe fulfilling orders and the like, that might not hurt you from a notification standpoint to affected persons. So, like, those are the people that someone like Gordon McKernan might represent or any other plaintiff's attorney. But then also a scenario where there might be a breach of contract because you weren't able to fulfill an order within a certain period of time. And more we're starting to see in contract agreements standards in which one party will require the other party to meet a certain standard when it comes to, you know, basic infrastructure or having certain kinds of insurance policies in place so that if something happens like that, and unfortunately we're getting to the point now, it's not a matter of if, but it's a matter of when, if it does happen and when it does happen, you're fit to respond accordingly so that you can get back up to business and going back at it. And so that's what the lawyers do, though, is we help manage that legal exposure. If it's a scenario where it's possible that data might have been acquired by an unauthorized attacker, for example, first the lawyer comes in initially and establishes what's called the attorney-client privilege. It basically means that anything that's discussed between the client and the attorney is privileged. The attorney, in turn, then hires a cybersecurity expert to come in and basically stop the attack and then manage the scope of it. Not to get too off of the beaten path on it, but at the end of the day, of course, a lot of firms now have IT services, but cybersecurity is a completely different niche, and there's a group of professionals like Trevor here that are just geared to understand what the threats are and how to respond to them. They look at it every single day, and they know what to do. It's a little bit different whenever you're also managing, the roads and the streets of the town, not to mention just, being the police force as well. And so, but the attorney comes in, establishes that privilege, hires the expert to come and do that so that everything up to that point is done with privilege. And so you can figure out whether you do need to notify somebody, and if so, you can take those steps. What you don't want to do is notify prematurely or notify in a circumstance where you might not otherwise need to. Why? Because that could cause unnecessary damage to your reputation. You look at some companies where they notify there's a data breach, rightfully so or wrongfully so. People might think twice about going there. And so mm-hmm. Coming back to the scenario you're talking about is whether it's giving information to the government or the like, there might either be a slowdown or just a complete lack of willingness of people to really participate in that business because of that stained reputation stemming from a cyber breach. But at the end of the day, the attorney's there to basically help them do it quietly and then take the legal compliance steps if and where needed.
So this thought popped into my head is a while back. I think it was Target had a data breach or something to the effect that credit card numbers were taken. And we actually got notified, I want to say by Capital One, that's who our bank is, and they said, hey, Target had a data breach, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to send you an all-new debit card with a brand new debit card number. And I'm like, great. Now I got to go plug all those debit cards into all the payment systems. But so in that situation for Target, was that was there an attorney in the back saying, hey, this is a good thing to do, is to tell people you need new debit cards?
And first and foremost, I wasn't involved in
that. Well, yeah, you were not involved in that. I'm just asking.
In that situation, like you said, that was a matter of financial information getting out. They didn't actually get in through Target. Target had a great cybersecurity infrastructure for all intents and purposes. They actually got in through an HVAC vendor with whom Target did business. But at that point, they had come to, I guess, a reasonable determination that they figured out that there was an unauthorized acquisition, which taking of that information. And so at that point, every single law, law statewide, or every single state law, including in this scenario where there's financial information at stake, in extent, federal law, required a notification of affected persons. So in that scenario, some people got a letter directly from Target saying, hey, you need to change your credit card information or the like, it might be affected. Other scenarios, it's the issuing bank that's reaching out and telling you to do this. And so that's how that can happen, though. But it might sometimes come directly from the company, it might come on a website, depending on how big it is. But I will say this, when it comes to these kind of situations, usually the financial industry is pretty on top of it when it comes to, at the very least, changing your information and not always holding you accountable for, say, fraudulent charges and the like.
Right.
Having said that, it's one of those things where it's always important, one way or the other, to check your finances and the like, but always just keep an eye on bank accounts, charges, and things like that, just for potential flags for fraud or the like.
Okay.
Actually, I'd like to just briefly.
I saw you took a note down.
Yeah, so the something that that you mentioned there about a supply chain hack. I don't know if that was the term you used, but the HVAC vendor that was involved, apparently with this Target breach. That's a pretty common vector, right, for attackers. If they want to attack a larger business, they'll look at the vendors and the different partners that business does has relations with, and then
that's actually really smart.
Yeah, they'll attempt to find the weaker link in the chain because that's the smartest thing to do, right? So I just thought that I'd bring that up because that is even though you may not feel though your business is a target, you may not realize that you could be doing business with a potential target, which makes you a target.
No pun intended.
Target. No pun intended. No, that is a great, I never even thought about that. Like when you mentioned the HVAC and then of course being a weaker link in a grand scheme of an attack, like you could, as a small business, you could be the weak link of a bigger company's demise. I say demise, potential demise.
Right.
Like that's unsettling.
Well, I mean, it's it's the age we live in, I guess. One of the most important things I believe, that can come out of all of this discussion is awareness.
Yeah.
So awareness is something I think many more people have as of very recently in Louisiana. Due to a lot of the high-profile events that have taken place here, and some people have seen it in the companies that they work for already, but then when it's on the news, or I'm so sure folks that live in New Orleans, and everybody that was affected by the OMB hack in Louisiana, is thinking about vulnerability, at least where it inconvenienced them. So take that a step further. I think that there's a certain onus on folks these days to have a personal investment and try to be personally aware, because we're all targets and at some level these days.
And I think that it just goes to a lot of small companies might think, that couldn't possibly affect me because I'm not that important. I don't have that big of a, you know, a face to, right. to warrant any kind of importance.
That's anybody's thought.
Well, right, and it's not always a matter of, it's not necessarily why you, but who do you do business with? And so, like you said, I mean, at times looking for every crack and crevice to get into, and if they can't get in through the big one, they might go in through a smaller one. And not to discount it, we're talking about intentional matters. There's, you know, also certain situations where something could just happen by accident, where someone accidentally sends an email to the wrong place, or you know, accidentally uploads things to Dropbox or the like or whatnot. That's also, you know, an unintended disclosure of information that could affect a business one way or the other. And so, I mean, just understanding these risks and how to not only to the best that you can prevent them, but then also in the event that they do happen, take a breath and respond to them. I mean, just makes a company that much better at doing business and accepting the fact that things can happen, but when they do, you know how to respond to it.
You know, and I just thought of another potential scenario for small businesses, and I had an experience at a company that I worked at, a decent size e-commerce company in Lafayette. And they actually had an attack via the ransomware, crypto locker, whatever you want to call it. Because I know you mentioned ransomware earlier. And I know, wasn't the OMV, was that ransomware or what was?
I don't know all of the details about that, but from what I read in the news, I think maybe there was an element of, you know, it wasn't a ransomware attack.
So for those that are listening, you may be a potential target themselves. So like this, just the average person who goes 8 to 5 into their cubicle on a computer, they get emails all the time. Their work is a lot of the times through email. The company that I worked at, there was a staff member who was expecting an email from one of the carriers, UPS or FedEx, because they ship a lot. And so this email came through, looked like a legitimate email for one of the carriers. And so this employee opened the email and clicked a PDF. It was labeled a PDF. He opens it, or this person opens it. I don't know if it was a he or she anymore. I can't remember. It's been a while. But they opened the email and figured out that, oh, the email was junk. So they trashed it. But a very, very short amount of time later, all of a sudden, there's a particular folder on the NAS folder, like the shared folder that we have internally, and it got locked down. There was very, very significant files on that server that I accessed, the creative director accessed, the sales team accessed, even the CIO, the CEO all had access to. That was a very high traffic server, got completely locked down by this crypto locker ransomware thing, and the software was basically prompting this company to send them Bitcoin currency in exchange for releasing the information back to you, you know, a ransom. So what do you say to, you know, potential companies or individuals in that scenario? Like, what can you look out for, if anything?
Well, I mean, the scenario you describe is what they call phishing, and when it's a very targeted thing, they call it spear phishing. So likely, you know, that was how that attack worked, right? So there, someone on the outside, the attacker, was aware. They may have had some previous compromise where they could have been watching the emails exchanged on the email server had they already accessed the email server, and know that there, you know, is a dialogue going on between a vendor and this company that you're talking about, to then be aware, oh, I can now send a well-crafted fake email to this individual that says, hey, the bank account number we need you to make payment to is this bank account number. Can you please hurry up and get it done? You know, maybe it's from the CTO or the CEO or, you know, someone that, you know, from inside the organization or you know, remit payment for the vendor. And it can be tricky to spot. So one of the things is, like I mentioned before, awareness. You need to be aware, and the teams need to be trained and thinking about these possibilities. And, you know, with every email that they open in a situation like that, they have to be cognizant that this threat exists, and that potentially if this email is not, you know, legitimate, especially when it has attached files, that's going to be a real, you know, indicator, because the email itself is just text. So most hacks require some file to be downloaded onto your local machine, and then, you know, you attempt to open it. That typically triggers the malicious code to then begin executing. So at that point, it's really too late. So what you want to do is, you know, hope that that everyone on your team is aware of these threats and is thinking about these things very critically. You know, it's just it's a few more moments of time. Every time you read an email, which, you know, I know how it works. That's how these guys get everyone. It's a rather routine, mundane
task.
Yeah,
and you open an email.
Oh yeah, it's another thing, and you kind of do it.
And if you're trying to be a power user,
through it, right?
And you're trying to be quick, like, oh yeah, I'm super fast. Click, 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 and you're trying to be a power user, and all of a sudden, your stuff starts screwing up.
Be fast and break things.
Yeah, be fast and break
things. And that's the kind of going. And there's almost two things happening there. You have social engineering attacks that are preying on And that's not necessarily anybody being quote-unquote stupid. It's a matter of trying to do things fast, trying to do things efficiently. And, I mean, as you'll have the witching hour, too, at the end of the day, where people aren't maybe thinking as clearly as they might otherwise would. But, like, in a ransomware attack, you're basically having somebody deploy a virtual freeze on your system if you were to click on it. And the other situation, the one where someone's in the account and directing payments, things like that, that's what amounts to be a business email compromise, where they're getting in through remote access. And I mean, I'm telling you, they can be quick. They'll jump in there real quick. They'll do a rule change on your email and divert all your incoming mail into a subfolder that you might not even see. The first sign is maybe someone who responds to an email that was sent out by somebody else, the attacker, saying, you know, I didn't get this, or I couldn't do that, or the like. But somebody might not notice at 4 o'clock p.m. that they didn't receive any emails from 4 to 5, and they might not know until the next day. That all gives the attacker time to go in there, do a word search in the email to figure out what's going on, and then identify areas where they can hop in the middle of a transaction like that. So if you're looking at somebody who handles payment on behalf of your company, or someone like HR, those are going to be the ones that they're usually trying to get to, because they're the most likely to cut and issue checks. But then you also look on the flip side of that of, okay, so they don't find anything. They're going to then sometimes use your email account to then send more spam out as sort of like a proxy attack base. And so little things like that, where it's it helps to have an expert involved and experienced attorney as well, to really just understand what is going on there, so that A, you can stop it, but then also address what kind of legal liabilities you may have, just because once you do fix it and get yourself active and running, nobody wants to deal with lawsuits or regulatory investigations and the like. But like Trey said, training. I mean, at the end of the day, you can have the greatest system in the world, but if you don't have employees that are keeping an eye out for this stuff, they can be your strongest link, they can be your weakest link. And so doing just that right there can't always prevent something, but at the same time, you can do a great deal to limit your exposure in that regard. And then, and also just multi-factor authentication. I don't know if you wanted to talk about that, but whenever you sit down at a computer, you plug in a name, a password. People aren't always the greatest when it comes to passwords. Sometimes they, you know, use the same one for multiple sites.
Look, I'm guilty of that. I use the same exact password for almost everything.
But the beauty of at least multi-factor situation, which I would always still recommend, you know, have diverse passwords and the like, and not repeat them, but and consistently change them on a periodic basis. But when it comes to multi-factor authentication, it requires not only the username and the password, but then also some, if it's, for example, two-factor authentication, at least one other action to get into that. And so one of the most popular ways is through an app where you plug in your name, your password, and then you have a choice, you know, send me a text, send me a call, or give me an access code. And that just gives you something else. Again, there's always things that could happen, but at the end of the day, it's just that next step that shores up that even if someone has gotten your credentials, at the very least, you're a step safer, just because you have that second line of defense of access to your account.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, it really kind of comes down to, you know, prevention and cure, right? So, or remedy. So, you know, the training and the awareness can be that prevention. And then, you know, if unfortunately that hasn't been the case, there's remedy, legal remedy, and, you know, acting to correct the matter after it's occurred. But definitely, I think that it's a matter that's affecting more and more people out there. I mean, there could be folks out there listening and watching today that have suffered through this, or it may unfortunately befall some of them soon.
So what about cell phones? So I get many, many emails sent to my phone that I know are straight up junk, and I can tell that they're phishing. And whenever I sense that it's a phishing email, my first reaction, especially if it comes from my bank or like I have PayPal gets, I get a bunch of phishing from PayPal, not PayPal themselves, but people acting like PayPal. The first thing I do, and this could be kind of like with the training, is I go look at the email address. What is the email address? Where's it coming from? And a lot of times, not every time, but a lot of times the phishing email is like, it goes like something like this. For example, I'll use PayPal. PayPal at email dot PayPal dot. It's like this weird like train of emails. Like the domain doesn't sound legit or anything. Are those phishing attacks like that I'm seeing?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, I guess it comes through text too. You know, your email, your text, and with the text, it's sometimes you'll get a link on, like with my iPhone, there'll be a link, and I can just see that it's a blue link with an underline, and I can click on it, but that's never something I do because I don't know where it's gonna take me, and none of my friends are usually sending me a
link.
Especially numbers I don't know, right?
So right.
Number I don't know, send me some link. Best advice is don't ever open that. And then it does come through your email, which you do have a bit more visibility, right? So you might want to go and look on your phone or in your browser, however you do it on your computer, to see not just the label, because usually what those applications will show you is how it's labeled. Might say Ben Powers, as the label, and the name of your organization behind it. But if I click on that in my iPhone or in my browser or Android or whatever, I can see actually what email address did it come from and not just what it's labeled as.
Yeah.
And so like you mentioned, you look at what comes after the at sign. And so that's your domain. So if it says it's coming from Ben at Developing Lafayette, then I'm looking for that, at developinglafayette.com to be your email address,
yeah,
or something coming from that domain. And so if it's not a one-to-one and the label doesn't match the domain, then like immediately it's very suspicious.
Yeah.
I don't know that there couldn't be some legitimate reason that would happen, but I would definitely have questions and not open any links and or documents that were attached to anything that I had any questions about.
Yeah. So like some of the emails that I'll get too say, urgent requirement, please log in to rectify an account issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they give you this button, click to log in. And so it almost got me one time. I was like, it was like, it might have been PayPal or it might have been my bank. And it was like, you have 24 hours to fix this, or we're locking something down or locking your account. So as someone who wants my account to stay active, I'm about to click the link and log in. But then I'm like, let me go to the website first. Straight to the website, log into my account. You should get like a pop-up, or you should get like an error, a message saying that you have something to take care of. And a lot of times I've never found anything.
Well, I mean, Stephen can probably verify this, but a huge indicator, and I'll let you speak to it, is anything urgent. If there's some situation where you're prompted to urgently, immediately click this link out of the email or something to that effect, my experience has been that's almost always something malicious.
I mean, and I on a actual daily basis, I'll get stuff from other people in my firm or they're like that. Well, actually say urgent on top. But I think one of the best words of advice I ever got was, there's always time to breathe first, no matter what the issue is. And so, and usually if, after taking that breath and just taking a second to look before you respond, it's one of those things. Do you, point then fire, or do you fire then point? And if you know, you're firing and then pointing, you're more likely to have that scenario. But usually there's indicators like that. If you're just taking a moment to look at them, you can identify them. Like you said, though, at the end of the day, though, people are, you know, trying to move fast, trying to be efficient. You know, you get a bonus at the end of the year for being efficient, not for being Mr. Cybersecurity the like. And so, but that's what really it is. It's just, you know, taking that breath. I mean, and understanding, and just take, not only take a breath, but then think, is this typical? Is this, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, that's kind of how I take a look at it. But like you mentioned, sometimes the email addresses can kind of give it away. Sometimes they're a little bit deceptive. So like developing Lafayette, you know, at developing Lafayette, they might just take out one T.
Yeah.
Or at developing Lafayette's plural. And so little things like that if you just...
If you're too quick.
Right.
And to miss something like that. So back, one more thing about phones. I've been seeing a lot, and a lot of podcasters, a lot of YouTubers are pushing this. VPNs. It's a VPN... Oh, Steven, you have to go. Okay. Steve, it was a great pleasure to have you.
We'll catch up with you soon.
Oh, yeah.
Thanks for coming.
But ask him about VPNs. Yeah. I swear he will not be disappointed.
I'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Well, if you have any cybersecurity issues and need an attorney, give Steve Booker.
Hey, a touch. As long as you get the phone number right, don't worry about how you get the last name. Yeah.
All right, Steve, have a good one.
VPNs. VPNs are a pretty powerful way to, you know, maintain privacy between, you know, your workstation and your corporate network. If you work for a company that's invested in that kind of technology, for private individuals. You know, I don't use a VPN personally because I typically am only doing things that I'm worried about being secure over the internet when I'm banking or when I'm doing something that's a e-commerce transaction.
Yeah.
So in that case, it's critical to me, and I won't do any kind of business on the web that involves payment if I don't see the padlock in the address bar for the URL. So an HTTPS. Meaning that it's encrypted, so that satisfies me for most things. I do know that there's a lot of people that that like the idea of using a VPN to further protect the traffic that they're using on the web, but for me personally, it's not something that that I want to introduce because I don't. Being in this industry, if I want a VPN, I'll just set my own up. But the service VPNs, I think there was actually some issue recently, that I read about where there was a compromise of the user credentials or some sort of information about the database of people that do use that VPN. And so it's a bridge too far. But I am very concerned that all the traffic websites I'm using, whether or not that's encrypted traffic with HTTPS.
Okay, so according to what you study and the different scenarios, shopping online or doing anything online, you should worry less about having a VPN and worry more about if the source that you're making the transaction through has the S after HTTP.
Right, right.
With the green little padlock or whatever have you. I know different browsers have different ways of indicating the security. I'm guessing the S stands for security.
Right, right. Okay. So I mean, in general, 10 years ago, or maybe even 5 years ago, there was no indicator that a website that wasn't using encryption, that looked normal. Now, on the most, the most recent versions of most of the browsers, it treats secure websites as just normal and you see the little padlock, but whenever you're at a website that's only using HTTP protocol and not encrypting that traffic with SSL TLS certificates, it will show that as insecure. On the new Chrome browser, for instance, it says not secure, and which doesn't necessarily mean that there's that there's something wrong with that website or that it's been hacked or something like that. It just means that any nefarious or any malicious bad actor that could potentially position themselves between you and that website could read all of the information that passes through. And so whenever you're passing your credit card information through or any other kind of health or personally identifiable information, you want to know that the end website that you're doing business with and you are the only two parties that are able to read the communication, and that if there were someone in the middle, you'd see some sort of broken padlocks on it, which would tell you, hey, there's something funny going on here. So okay. I mean, it's hard to know, but that's it's a safe bet these days. You want to be moving your own website, if you own one, to HTTPS and encrypting your traffic so that your audience feels comfortable and that they know that the communications there with your website are secure. And then as an individual, you could potentially be passing credit card information or personal information through a bad actor if you don't know that that is encrypted.
Wow. So I think there was one website, I don't remember the website, that was local that I saw that it was not secure, and my mind told me, like, it should be secure. Like, why aren't they?
Well, used to you didn't know because the browser didn't tell you, hey, this is maybe something funny. But now if it's just a regular website, it says, hey, this isn't secure anymore, because there's the industry has actually shifted its position to a position of greater security.
That's good.
Yeah, it is.
It's really good. Because 10 years ago, that wasn't a thing.
And it's a little bit of a, I'm sure that there's a lot of businesses out there that that see it as a challenge, right? As something else that they need to do. It shouldn't be a huge problem for most web companies and most places that are providing the service for you. To help you add that additional layer, for the traffic. It's not like re-engineering or rebuilding your entire website to get that feature.
So it's a pretty easy, I don't know if I want to call it an add-on, but an upgrade for better words. So what are some of the things that you do on a daily basis to help small businesses or businesses or government in general with your company?
So I wear a few different hats and I actually have a couple of different jobs. A lot of my work here in the local area is with you and making sure that Develop in Lafayette is always available. I don't get a lot of calls from you,
which should be a good thing, right?
I mean, it's good for me. I hope it's good for you too.
It means that everything is working usually, right?
Right. Yeah. If my phone rings and you're calling me, I'm checking the website to make sure it's up before.
Right.
but typically that's it's not always that you're calling for. What I do for you is very much what I do for most folks, which is to understand what is your goal, and in your case you needed to present your website. I think when you came to me there was an issue with your old website. You're already on AWS, and we needed to make some enhancements.
The issue was is that I had so much traffic at certain times of the day that the server that I had built, or that I kind of started on my own, which I had very limited knowledge of how to work AWS. And if you don't know what AWS is, it's Amazon's Web Services. I think it's what it's the acronym completes as. Amazon has a great, great company, I guess subsidiary company that they have with you know, servers and different infrastructure things for databases and all that. But I tried to start one on my own because my first website, my first version of the website was on a very cheap server for $5 a month. And after I got like a couple hundred people trying to hit my website a day, it started shutting down. Like there would be 2 hours out of the day where no one can go to my website because I posted about a new business that everybody wanted to read and nobody could get to it. And so I had to look into other options. So that's when I went to AWS. Again, very limited knowledge. I just kind of quickly Googled how to fire up a server, an instance as Amazon calls it, and fired one up. And even then it wasn't what I needed, but it was halfway running. Like I would have to oftentimes go and reboot that instance to get the traffic back flowing again, because there would still be times where there was like the site was down because it was overflowed. What can you briefly explain what you did to improve or build a better infrastructure for the site?
Yeah, sure. One of the last gigs that I had was working in the federal enterprise consultancy space at CGI Federal here in Lafayette. Part of the job there was on these large federal projects, we would template all of the solutions that we built. So, you know, just like it sounds, you know, it's kind of predefined all of the elements that that need to be deployed to stand up something like a web application. In your case, it's a WordPress website. Can be templated in this language in AWS that's called CloudFormation. It's a service that uses these templates. And so I had a few of these things available because I had, you know, spent so much time creating those kind of solutions for CGI Federal. And so I took some of that knowledge and my goal was to deploy something for you one time that would be fault tolerant and highly available. So what that means is in the event that one component of your infrastructure were to fail, it could be detected and then the system can heal itself by replacing that web server in this case. So the way your architecture works for developing Lafayette is in two separate data centers that AWS owns, you have your web servers, two virtual machines. You have a load balancer that the internet traffic talks to. And then if you have healthy instances of virtual machines available, it will route the traffic to those healthy instances. And for some reason, those instances are not healthy. They will be destroyed and rebuilt with healthy instances. So at all times, the traffic can always find a healthy instance, and then when I visit the website or anyone visits the website, it's always there. So it's a little bit much to think that that your mom and pop shop is gonna make this kind of architectural design decision. but it's really not rocket science. It does take some specialized knowledge, but it's a solution that is available to pretty much every business, and it allows me to build one time for a client and have the confidence that my phone's not going to be ringing constantly with you having problems because I know that this solution is durable and reliable. And it will work unless there's some really big issue. And so that is what we did in your case. And I think that that's, in general, that I took that design pattern from, industry at large. So it's really the kind of standard, this fault tolerant, highly available architecture is kind of the current standard for, anything that that needs to be online 24/7.
So you said like something like a small mom and pop probably wouldn't utilize this, but could, I mean, if their website has traffic onto it and they're making money from it, I mean, should they think about doing something like that? Like, I mean, is that something that would a small mom and pop even think about, or should they just? Would you recommend them just staying with whatever solution do they have at that moment?
Well, I mean, I'd say that it really kind of comes down to a matter of, you know, personal preference and budget,
yeah.
On the part of the small business. I think budget's usually one of the key
constraining
factors, you know, as you might expect. You know, what we did in your case, I think, was reasonable. I think that it was well under $5,000 for everything that we did to get you set up. Which I would like to point out did not include building your website initially. So that's, I think, an important
point.
This is just to make sure that, you know, once you have a functional website that's, yeah. you know, that's already got traffic and you know, you're doing business, we could migrate over to a scenario like I described we're using in your case, something that's highly available and fault tolerant,
right.
You know, with a price point somewhere under $5,000. So some folks, you know, depending on what your revenue looks like, you know, that might be a little bit of a high, you know, ticket price for you. But I think anybody, you know, that's making decisions, thinking about the future, and wanting to have a solution today that that they won't need to revisit anytime soon. You know, it's a reasonable price.
So. For us, it came down to, do we want to risk not having traffic? For one thing, I mean, we want people to be able to get to our website in general, because we post things all, you know, every day, at least we try to. But we also have sponsors. We also have people who advertise with us. And if our website goes down, and let's say it goes down for a long time, then our advertisers, if they really want to know, you know, we may have to like reimburse or like comp them some other way. So for us, it was like, we don't want to have to worry about that scenario. We want to just have, you know, like you said, our websites running rates, you know, have a high percentage. We want to keep it running.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's another technical term.
Yeah, well, in the industry, they call those the P9s. So your percentage of uptime.
Yeah, uptime. Yes.
So that's your and actually this whole design paradigm that I keep talking about, highly available, fault tolerant architecture, is directly from Amazon, right? So AWS is. You know, like you mentioned, it's like a subsidiary of Amazon, and you know, a lot of people.
Amazon's a billion different things.
Right. Amazon, you know, first and foremost is you know, it's a fulfillment and, you know, e-commerce business. So in order for, they're like everybody else on the web, right? They invented a lot of these patterns that, you know, I'm just borrowing from, and others like me are just borrowing from, using their data centers. Learning their patterns and then doing it essentially their way in their garden, it does allow you to take advantage of all of the advances they've made to help make sure that Amazon.com never goes down and that they can always get their advertising.
Yeah, because they have to stay up too.
Right. So there's actually, you know, if you think about it this way, Amazon.com is built on AWS. And then AWS offers what they call service level agreements for uptime and these P9s. It's in the world of this, they call it system reliability. So these P9 values are usually like at least four nines, which is like 99.99% of the time, or five nines, 99.9999%, or, you know, it goes greater.
Yeah.
And different services within their ecosystem have, you know, different, you know, P9 values. But, you know, in the end of the day, it's a important part of what they offer their customers. So if you're building your solution in their world, then you get to take advantage of the fact that they are offering this service, your virtual machines is available 99.999% of the time. I don't quote me on that, but something to that effect. It's at least four nines. And so if you're doing it following best practices, you will inherit those those same uptime percentages for your business. And so that's that's a huge it's a win if your business depends on knowing that we can be up all the time, because we've got to be able to answer our current customers and advertise to our viewers and sell our products, whatever it is that you do. So that's kind of the underlying benefit of using something like that. I mean, there's other clouds. They have all kind of the similar stuff. I'm just I focus and have my expertise in AWS, particularly, and not Google or Azure.
Right, gotcha. So we're at about 56 minutes. It's time flew by pretty quick. Is there anything that we have not discussed that you want to mention?
Not really. I'd like to thank you.
Yeah,
having me here.
Look, I thank you for everything you've done for me. Because look, I know that I've texted you or called you like later at night, not super late, like midnight, but 8 or 9 o'clock. I'm like, oh, Trey, what's going on?
Yeah, it does happen sometimes, and I do my best to be responsive. I got a group of people that support me as well, so it's not just me, but I get a good feeling from what I do, and it's good to know that that it's helping to to support other local businesses and add to success, or at least be a part of your success.
Yeah. Look, I really appreciate everything you do, because let me just say that whenever you initially set up all the infrastructure on the back end, I had no clue just how just how well built an infrastructure would be. I had no clue what that looked like. I just knew that I needed to have a server that was running my website, and I just thought, oh, that one server is going to stay up forever. And I wasn't thinking correctly, because I know better than that. Like, I know that computers crash. So if I had just one server running, like, what was going to happen if that server killed over? Like, I don't know what would have happened. I'm just guessing. I was hoping that Amazon would just have something built in.
And a lot of people think that, right? They don't know. They because it's you got to read, you got to learn. But yeah, it can work that way. But Amazon doesn't do it for you.
Right.
Right. They give you the tools to do it for yourself.
They show you all of the when you're logging in and signing up and reading about the. It sounds like through the graphics and through all the informationals that they send you, it sounds like that this is what they do for you, but you have to do it for yourself in their system that they provide, like they give you access to. So if anybody's listening and you have a small business and that is your business, that's your revenue, especially nowadays, a lot of people are moving into opening up their own online store, and even people that are physical businesses, mom and pop businesses that are realizing, oh, physical traffic, it's slowing. Maybe I should go on to the online market. If you're not already online, then you're past the time to be there. But to get there, you want to do it the right way, and you don't want to have any downtime. You want your website to be up and running. You want your servers to be operational. And so I think if you're a local business looking to move into the online world, I'd give Trey and his team a ring, or I say a ring because I'm going back to the physical. Let me give you their website. I have it pulled up right here. So on the screen, it's infascination.com. I can spell it for you, or you can just Google it, infascination.com. They give you all the information there. They give you I don't want to say scenarios, but they kind of mapped out a couple of things for you and what they can do for you.
Right. And one of the things that we do in addition to consulting is training. So whether you want to learn more about how AWS works and have your team, you know, own your AWS operations to, you know, a greater extent and, you know, and with more authority, we also do training for cybersecurity and you know, as well. So, you know, we have a few different offerings, and we'd love to hear from anyone that that may have interest in talking to us.
Sweet. Well, Trey, I appreciate you coming on, and I obviously appreciate Steve for coming on, even though he had to run out.
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah,
sorry you had to go early, but we love you, man.
But yeah, he had a meeting, so we understand that. Again, Trey, appreciate you, and I look forward to continuing our working relationship. And if anybody's looking to get some done for their website, as far as, you know, the back end, I don't think you design websites, do you? But you know people who do.
Yeah, I mean, I can refer you to a number of great folks in town that do the website design. But yes,
get with Trey. He can help you with all that. Mfascination.com. And ladies and gentlemen, that is the tea. Again, Trey, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
All right, guys. And one more time, Sterling Automotive Group, Sterling Automotive Pre-Owned Group. They are our sponsor. Please give them a visit online at save@sterling.com. They have a large amount of pre-owned vehicles for you to check out. It's tax time, so most people are getting refunds. If you're getting a refund, chances are you probably have an interest in looking at a new vehicle, because, you know, that's what gets advertised all the time during the beginning of the year. Blowout sales, you know, all that fancy jargon that they throw around. And there's one place that slaps the hood of the vehicle or the window. You know, there's tons of places that are going to be advertising to you. So anyway, check out Sterling Automotive Pre-Owned Group. They are supporting us. They're supporting local. They are local, and we appreciate them. All right, and with that, we are out. All right, Trey, thanks.
For information on sponsoring the Tea Podcast by Developing Lafayette, go to our website at developinglafayette.com and click Advertise.